Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
And now, a first for Radio Boston. We've got 1,000 guests in our studio right now. All at once, 1,000 of them, right here. I just tweeted a bunch of pictures of them. Check it out at Meghna WBUR, that's M-E-G-H-N-A W-B-U-R, or at Radio Boston. And if you can't see them by now, you can certainly hear them. Yes, they are small, winged, buzzy, yellow and black, and they are bees, specifically Apis mellifera, or the common honeybee. They're contained in a sealed glass observational hive, and they arrived here with someone who might be the bee's biggest champion, Noah Wilson Rich. He's founder and chief scientific officer of the Best Bees Companies. They create and manage beehives all over England, and he's also author of the beautiful new book, The Bee, A Natural History. Noah Wilson Rich joins us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Meghna and Anthony. Pleasure to be here.
And welcome to all of your apiary friends here.
Thank you very much.
Who have joined us. And they are pretty vocal, or buzzy, I guess.
They are. It's amazing you've been able to mic them up. I wonder what they're saying.
We can do quite a lot at Radio Boston here. So, first of all, tell us, this is an observational hive that you've brought in. Well, what is that?
It is. So an observation hive, it's about the size of a suitcase, kind of like an ant farm, but for bees, it's much more realistic because when it's installed, the bees can come and go through a tube, often through a window or an external wall of a building. So this is kind of an inside beehive versus the typical boxy outside hive that we might be more familiar with.
Okay, now we can actually see what basically a hive that's being created there. And
yep, and these are also what we use in schools. Some Boston public schools even have them associated with classroom hives. It's a local nonprofit group. So we provide educational resources around the world to get more bees in the classroom.
Okay, well, we're going to talk more about honeybees in just a second. But can you please tell me first, how is it that you became so passionate about bees? Because I actually understand that you didn't really love insects growing up as a child.
You know, it's so funny. I was born in Manhattan, and my parents are educators. But growing up, I wasn't the type of kid that played in the dirt, and I really was into nature, but to the same degree as anybody else. So I just wasn't that kind of bug kid that people might think that I was. And I was pre-med in college. I moved to Boston to go to Northeastern University, where I'm now teaching, which is another fun story. My father told me to be pre-med, and so I did that. I didn't know what else to do with my life, and I had a really fun teacher. She inspired me and taught me about the world of social animals and social insects, and Becky Rosengauss at Northeastern, she worked with termites, and I said, I don't really know anything about termites. I don't really want to work with them, but I'll do it, and that's how she introduced me to other social insects like bees. I went to grad school at Tufts, became an expert, and fell in love with them.
Wow. Well, I mean, so that's a great story, but what was it about bees in particular that you made you decide you wanted to you're dedicating your life to them now?
This is my life's work. It's really two things. So one, being social animals, just like humans, I was really interested in how they keep each other healthy. Bees don't have doctors or hospitals they can go to. So how do they resist disease naturally? There's a lot of opportunity here for drug discovery, for example, amongst other things. It's really exciting. But also, bees themselves are dying. And that started in my first year of graduate school. So this kind of weird bug program that I was doing became so much more relevant.
Right.
It was beyond my interests. It was a necessity for humanity.
I mean, you're referring to colony collapse disorder, right?
That's right.
I mean, which is basically, for a time, it seemed as if it was wiping out bees off the face of the planet almost.
That's
like,
right.
Hives would disappear.
In some fields, some apiaries, it was 100% loss, especially crops that we relied upon, such as apples in Pennsylvania, almonds in California. It was raising food prices because the availability of pollinators was going down. So you can think about bees as an economic commodity, as well as many other things like pollinators.
Do we know what causes or did cause colony collapse disorder?
It remains controversial. There are a few leading hypotheses, such as neonicotinoids, which are a pesticide. Alex Liu at the Harvard School of Public Health has done a lot of research on this. Other hypotheses, such as diseases and habitat loss, also play a role. What's really fascinating, and it's something I'll be talking about at TEDx Boston coming up, is that it seems that maybe colony collapse disorder has ended on its own. That's not to say that bees are okay now. We just find their dead bodies, and they're dying for many other things. Right. We're still losing about 30 to 40% of beehives a year in the country.
That's amazing and disturbing. Mm-hmm. I want to talk with you a little bit more about that just a minute or two. But I want to take a step back first and talk about all the some of the fantastic things that I was learning in your book, The Bee, A Natural History. First of all, there are 20,000 species of bees in the world?
Yes, and honeybees are just one of those. There's so much more to be discovered, and there's so much more to appreciate about where our food comes from and all the other roles that they play.
Are they all pollinators?
They're all pollinators, and they're vegetarians, so these are kind of cousins to wasps, their meat-eating family.
And bees have been on the planet for as long as flowers have, essentially.
That's right. We don't really know which came first, the chicken or the egg, the flower or the bee, but it was about 100 million years ago when they appeared.
Okay. So obviously they've been essential partners in the Earth's various ecosystems from the start. But I have to be honest, I mean, my knowledge of bees was very limited to the common honeybee or, you know, the occasional lumbering bumblebee. I didn't realize that there were species of bees that are solitary because I thought of all of them as complex colony animals.
That's right. The honeybee is the superstar of the bee world. We give them so much credit, but recent research has shown that honeybees are not doing all the work we think they're doing. Many other things are pollinating crops, such as our local cranberries and then blueberries in Maine, cucumbers, for example. A lot of other bees are really doing the work that we are giving credit towards honeybees for.
Right. Well, there was one that I saw in your book that really caught my attention because it was spectacular. It is spectacularly beautiful. A solitary bee that has this iridescent green look to it. The orchid bee?
Yes, we've got some sweat bees. We've got orchid bees. We have some leafcutter bees that actually build their nests out of flower petals and these beautiful appearing little nests for individual bees. So what we can do is promote all bees. Even if we don't understand what the other species are, you can create habitat for them. You can hang bamboo or even a piece of pipe around a garden or somewhere and to promote that habitat so bees can move in. You can leave an old mouse nest to let bumblebees move into that too. You can promote them in ways that are very hands-off and, of course, safe.
Yeah. Well, humans have relied on bees for many thousands of years. I mean, in the book you say that it was back in ancient Egypt that beekeeping first became part of what humans do. Is that right?
That's right. And even maybe 15,000 or so years ago, we saw cave drawings of the first bee-human interactions around Spain and Europe. And then in Egypt is when we started keeping bees to help with pollination. We would keep them on boats along the River Nile as it would float down and pollinate the crops.
So tell me a little bit more about what Best Bees Company does, especially in light of what we were talking about earlier about colony collapse disorder and the vanishing of so many essential bees from agriculture and urban environments.
That's right. Yeah. So with the Best Bees Company, we provide bees for people who don't necessarily want to do the beekeeping themselves. So that's for residents, that's for businesses, schools, and we build beehives by hand. We'll install the bees, and then we have our beekeepers come by and we check on the bees. We can harvest honey if you like. All the honey and the bees and the hives belong to our clients. We're just in it to raise funding for our research to improve honeybee health. Yeah. We still write grants. They just don't really come through. So it's a new way to get research funding.
And how many places have you done this so far?
We've got about 350 beehives these days across five states. We just opened up our new Brooklyn headquarters this month, so it's been really exciting.
Yeah. And I mean, overall, I mean, there's a lot of ways to talk about how bees and humans rely on each other now. I can't remember if the exact number, but bees are basically a multi-billion-dollar part of our economy somehow.
Yes, to the U.S. economy alone, bees contribute about $15 billion each year, and that's mostly for their role as pollinators to over 100 fruit and vegetable crops. So, as I say, if you eat food, then you need bees.
Wow.
You need to know where the food's coming from.
And what effect did colony collapse disorder and the loss of that, you know, 30 to 40% of hives every year have on the ecosystems that the bees were living in. Not just the economy, but the ecosystem.
It's so hard to measure that, and it's a great question. And it's also important to look beyond colony collapse disorder into other things killing the bees, as well as it is to acknowledge the other 19,999 species of bees and what they're doing, because they could be suffering still much more than we realize. And until we understand the role of those bees, it's going to be hard to really understand the impact of the ecology and the economy.
So we don't actually have a full understanding of what their roles are in various environments?
We really don't. We've done a great job at documenting most of them, but beyond knowing what the bees are, we don't know much about their role or even where to find them or how to help them.
Oh, interesting. Because I had thought that because we know what a basic and very key function of theirs is, which is as pollinators for all manner of flowering plants, that in and of itself would be important enough to consider them like a linchpin in various ecosystems.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's really important to acknowledge their social nature as well. I mean, as we acknowledge too, not all bees are social, but for the ones that are, they have epidemics that can go around through their populations too. Just like with humans, when things like Ebola or bird flu pop up, the first thing that I think about is we could have used honeybees as a model for this, for example, to see how diseases spread through natural systems. It's something that is happening to bees on their own, and until we get a good grasp on that, it's going to be really hard to know what the impact to declining bee populations is.
Yeah. Well, in the last couple of seconds that we have, I'm getting slightly distracted here by how great this observational hive is, and our friends are still buzzing away in there. I've also heard that in some places bees are producing more honey in cities or urban environments than they are in rural areas. We just got a couple seconds. Can you tell us why that is?
Yes, so you can actually catch the talk I gave at TEDx Boston 2012 to see the whole explanation here, but what we found is that bees in Boston and Cambridge produce more honey than outside the city, and they survive the winters longer. You can actually check out more. I'll be at the Harvard Bookstore this Friday night doing a book signing, and then again on Bantam Cider with the Museum of Science next Wednesday evening.
Well, Noah Wilson-Rich is founder and chief scientific officer of the Best Bees Company and author of the wonderful new book, The Bee, A Natural History. Thank you, and thanks to the 1,000 friends you brought in today.
And it's a pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.